it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, folks, the Florida Gators come in to Death Valley Saturday night, national TV, coming off an 18-16 home loss to the University of South Florida. Not a bad team, but one that they were expected to win. And LSU comes off in a Louisiana Tech game that some, on at least on one side of the ball, some folks say was kind of pretty ugly. And Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, is here with us. Chris, welcome to the show.
No, always great to be with you, Newell. I think you assessed the preview of the game pretty well.
I don't know about you, Chris. That was a tough game to watch last week. I don't know. Yeah, I was jumping up and screaming, and my wife had to leave the room.
After it was all said and done, first of all, let me say a win is a win, and so you'll take that. To move to 2-0 for the first time in since 2019. So, the Tigers get their 1-0 mantra for the second straight week. Now they'll try to load up and do it again for week number three and obviously get off to a 1-0 start in SEC play. But, you know, the good thing about it is, you know, initially we're in the booth calling the LSU game with the Florida game on as it's going down its final minutes. And we turn around and look and we go, wait a minute, South Florida's got a chance to win. In fact, me, Jacob Hester, my spotter, Crafton Blair, and Patrick Wright were all looking at the TV when the kick went through the uprights. And we thought, initial thought was, okay, now Florida's going to be angry, backs to the wall. The only way they can change the narrative around their head coach and their program is to come upset LSU. That's the first thing you think of. But then right. After the night wore on, the game was over, LSU got the win 23-7, and I heard Coach Kelly after the game, saw and listened to some of the players after the game. I thought, you know, even though LSU won, and Florida would trade that with them every day, it's almost as if both teams really feel like they didn't play their best, and both teams have something to prove this week. So I think that's a good thing for LSU, and that's kind of what Coach Kelly said last night.
Yeah, I got to imagine it was it was a tough week at the practice facility for LSU this week.
He was not happy. Yeah, when the players talked to the media this week, they all said it was a spirited week of practice, and that's what I like about this team, though, is they seem to be pretty mature in the fact that they knew that was coming. They almost embrace it because they knew they needed to get better. And Whit Weeks, I think, talked about it. As well as the defense played. I mean, again, they wanted to throw a shutout, and I understand 23-7 doesn't look as good as 23-0. But they had some young guys in there. They scored a touchdown with a little over 4 minutes to go in the game. But they held Louisiana Tech to 154 total yards. For the second straight week of the season, they held their opponent to 3 of 13 on third down. And that dog will hunt in any game.
Absolutely.
And we saw the field position game go in favor of LSU as the game wore on. I think the average starting position for the Tigers in the first half maybe was the 16 or 17 yard line of their own. And then in the second half, their average starting position was the 42 yard line of their own. So when you look at the stats, almost everything was dominant except the final score.
Yeah. You know, for me, Chris, I said this to you, I think last time we talked, I kind of focus on one or two players of certain positions that I'm looking at based on what I'm reading during the week and, you know, what kind of game they had the previous week. I thought there was a lot of players that really stepped up and played great football. There were some that were getting repeatedly beat at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, when you step up and you start playing these teams of a higher caliber, because Tech was physical. They were strong, and you know there were a lot of one-on-ones that they were their side of the ball were winning repeatedly, on the line of scrimmage. And that was the thing that was a little difficult for me to watch. It was like, wow. I mean, we got a couple of players that are getting their ass whipped out there. Overall, the team was able to overcome it, pull it together, and win in the fashion that you just described. But you know as well as I, those individual battles when you play in those big games against, you know, teams that are going to be a lot stronger than Louisiana Tech, they matter.
Oh, 100%. And I think that, you know, kudos to Louisiana Tech. I mean, I spent 10 years at Georgia Southern, and we played in these type of games where we're playing basically up a level, if you will. And, you know, a lot of times you go into that thinking, all right, let's just kind of slow the game down. Let's take a lot of time between our snaps. Let's let the clock move. And that's not what Louisiana Tech did. They were pretty aggressive offensively and certainly defensively. They didn't change their MO. They were like, hey, we may be outmanned from a talent standpoint, but we're still just going to, you know, try to blitz, you know, our line of scrimmage. We'll play man on the back end with this 3-3-5. And, you know, I give them a lot of credit. I think your concern is valid, especially when it comes to the offensive line. I think the defensive line owned the line of scrimmage in their
they
action.
Did.
But the offensive line, 100%. Now, you know, some of that is some continuity change right out of the gate when Braylon Moore goes down on the first play of scrimmage in the first quarter. And again, DJ Chester was the starting center last year. I know he didn't have the greatest game, at least initially, but he did grade out as the best lineman of the game against Louisiana Tech, believe it or not. But I think there was a continuity issue there. The good news is Braylon Moore is expected to be back after the high ankle sprain, but has had a great week of practice, and Coach told us last night that he's a go. So hopefully that will settle things down, because I think Braylon brings so much experience. He lines the guys up. He makes the calls at the line along with the coaching staff. And really, when you look at the Clemson game, again, giving all the credit to Louisiana Tech for some of the disruption they caused, but let's look at the Clemson front seven versus the Louisiana Tech front seven. And I thought LSU's line did more than their share of punishment up front. So that's what I'm hoping for. And again, the coaches will tell you, the players will tell you, look, it didn't matter who the other team was. We got to go 1-0 this week. But I think there couldn't help. Just being human beings, I don't know if you could get that team as up for Louisiana Tech as you could for Clemson. There might have been just a few whispers in the head of, you know, this is going to be different. You know, I just think it's hard to be that hyped up when you're coming off a win like Clemson. I don't think there's going to be any issue with that when Florida lines up coming up tomorrow night. These two teams don't like each other.
You know, you've done this for a long time. The danger in the NCAA now, you know, with transfer portals, people moving around, you know, it's like a chess game where there's always a piece moving. You're going to find these teams that are just really physical and can play. I mean, Florida loses to South Florida. South Florida is a good team. There's a good program. They repeatedly, you know, win a lot of ball games, and they play the spoiler, you know, a lot, right?
Oh no, I know 100%. I mean, and they're kind of right now the darlings of college football, if you're paying attention to those that cover the sport, and for good reason. I mean, they handled Boise State in week one. I mean, just absolutely throttled the team that most people preseason felt like would challenge from the so-called G5 for a playoff spot. Well, South Florida said, hold my beer, because they throttled Boise State and then get the win over Florida in the swamp on a team for Florida that, you know, much like the talk here in Baton Rouge, this is Coach Napier's most talented team. He's returning five, I think, of his top six rushers offensively from a year ago. He's got DJ Lagway back, although Lagway certainly battled injury throughout spring ball and I think as recent as a week before the opening game. So I don't know how close to 100% and how much rust he's got to get off, but he's a great player. And then their offensive line, they went out and added some from the portal. I think they got like 109 career starts combined. So, again, that's a big win for South Florida. But make no mistake, you know, when you look at this roster and you look at what Florida's players individually have done wherever they have been, there's some guys whose names are going to be called in the first and second round of the draft.
Yeah. This is going to be a very – I think it's going to be a close game.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. It wouldn't surprise me in the least because Florida's defense under Coach Robinson, they got two coordinators, but Ron Roberts, I believe, is, you know, he's a former head coach and he may be the top DC, but their style of defense is no matter what, we are going to stop the run. You are going to have to beat us throwing the football. And they've also done a pretty good job, at least over their last five wins, which goes back to last season in the win over LSU in Gainesville, is they kept everything in the passing game in front of them. They didn't get beat deep a lot and still able to maintain a pretty suffocating rush defense. I mean, I think over the last six games, they've given up one rushing touchdown and they're giving up an average of 2.9 yards per carry. So that, to me, is where the game really will come down to. Will LSU be able to run enough to then force Florida to have to move some guys into the box, which then might be able to open up, you know, some of the vertical passing game that we really haven't seen yet? And I asked Coach Kelly last night. I said, you know, there's some concern about where is the vertical passing with all these great receivers. And he quickly, as I thought he would, you think I'm going to show everything we got against Louisiana Tech? No disrespect to the Bulldogs, but we got a lot of football left. And when you go back and look at the game, there were only one really big pass play connection of 23 yards. That was Garrett to Aaron Anderson. But there were a number of opportunities where they threw it downfield and Louisiana Tech was beat. And they just said, you know what, we're going to grab some jersey, bring this guy to the ground, and they can do it again. We're not going to let them score a touchdown. So, when you take away some of the pass interference penalties, LSU did try to go deep down the field.
Yeah, in fact, I'm glad you make that observation because, it's watching football for me is one of the few times that I'm not able to practice emotional intelligence.
emotions. That's why we're called fans. It's short for fanatics. Logic doesn't apply.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for throwing that out because I am certainly less than during a football game for sure.
Well, don't feel bad. I mean, Coach Kelly said the same thing on Monday. He said, I was livid. I didn't think we played well. I thought we made bad decisions. We committed way too many penalties. And he said that's why he was hot after the game. And then on Monday in his press conference, he said, we went and broke down the film. And while we certainly have a lot of room for improvement, and that's our job week to week, it wasn't as bad as I thought. So, again, coaches, players, fans, everybody, gets that emotional tie. And you realize, well, wait a minute, we didn't throw the ball deep over Louisiana Tech. How are we going to be able to do that against Florida and Ole Miss and Alabama and the rest of the schedule? But again, you take it one week at a time. And like I say all the time, that's what's great about LSU football. It's not week to week. It's not game to game. It's play by play. So with every snap of the football, you're either elated, or you're pulling your hair out. That's what makes LSU football so great.
So, Chris, I had the 66-year-old tuba player on the show the other day, and during the Louisiana Tech game, he got as much face time as about anybody. What a great story. What are you hearing nationally about that story of him playing in the band? He was a great interview, by the way. What a humble gentleman he truly is.
Yeah, it's interesting because I found out after the fact when the news broke prior to the season that he actually lives in our neighborhood. I've been asked since. I haven't witnessed him walking through the neighborhood practicing his tuba like apparently he did, jokingly annoying the neighbors with a solo tuba going down the street as he practiced marching. But he was our honorary MVP of the game because you're right. Every time we looked up during a timeout or during a break in action, there he was having fun with the Golden Band from Tigerland. So great story. And as you said, it's been covered nationally and good for him.
Yeah, Kent Broussard, he was really a testament, and he really wanted to share it, with the entire band, talking about how hard they work and everything else, and, the pregame tribute and what it meant and, how it was an inspiration to him. And, as I pointed out as a fan, when I go to the LSU game, if I miss the pregame tribute, it's almost like it's so much less of a game, right, when I miss that. Because I still get chills down my spine when they play it. I'm sure you do too. It's just, one of those things.
Yeah, it locks you into step. That's what I tell people is when we're up there in the booth and we're getting everything ready, just like everybody else, getting to their seats, getting their concessions, getting ready, and then you hear those notes that kind of lock you in that, all right, here we are. It's Saturday night in Death Valley, and you're right. I mean, the hair does stand up on the back of your neck. You're like, here we go. That's kind of the announcement of LSU football is on the way. So I think it's a great story. I mean, again, with we're bombarded every single hour with, you know, darkness and bad news and all that's wrong in the world. It was good to see that bright light get a little bit of attention last week.
Let me just one last thing about Florida. The one thing that scares me about DJ Lagway is he's due that kind of breakout game, right? I mean, and that kid can throw the ball. And it's going to be interesting when, hopefully it's not happening Saturday night, but when it does, it could be ugly for an opponent.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Florida team that I think the biggest loss offensively to the draft or to the transfer portal was the receiving core. But so far, you know, Lagway has hit 16 different guys, 16 different receivers through two games. Now, again, I know the first game was against Long Island. And then they lost the game to South Florida, but that's still distributing the football. And you know, Coach Kelly said it last night on his show, LSU recruited DJ Lagway hard, and Florida won out on that battle. And so they're well aware of what he can do, and his cannon is I mean, he can put it, you know, 30 rows up into the seats from 100 yards away if he wants to. You know, but I like what LSU's been able to do on the back end. I think the biggest improvement defensively for this team has been the secondary, and that goes to, you know, the addition of A.J. Halsey and the addition of Mansoor Delane, and really I think D.J. Pickett, who's an absolute superstar, is a true freshman. So that again will be an interesting battle, because Lagway, not really a true dual threat quarterback, and certainly at least so far this year doesn't look like it because of maybe not quite 100% health-wise. But when he's got time and a guy breaks open, he can put the ball there no matter where he is on the field. And that's what's going to be the biggest concern, to try to get after him. And he's a big dude. I mean, not only he's kind of a dual threat Newell in the sense that if you do get pressure, he's not necessarily going to beat you by blazing speed running the football. But he's just hard to get down. And just when you think you've got him sacked,
what is it like? 237? 237 pounds or something. He's a big boy. There's no doubt about that.
He said during media this week, he said, we know that when we get there, we're going to have to get him down. Like, the play's not over until he is down on the ground.
No doubt. Well, we look forward to another big night in Death Valley, and look forward to listening to you for sure. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers, thank you so much for joining us, and let's bring it home again.
Let's do it, and we'll do it again next Friday. Newell, have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. You too. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Mike Haas. Another big game. The Saints facing the San Francisco.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns.
You
know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Francisco 49ers as they come in to the Caesars Superdome. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints, to the bitter end last week. And I don't know, Mike, that it looked like a catch to me. He was down on the ground and the defender knocked it out of his hands. I still don't understand this end zone rule.
Yeah,
it's beyond.
Yeah, it's always a football move. Did he have, like, to me, if you have possession as you cross, you know, the plane, really the best angle that we saw, I didn't see until long after the game, which was kind of from behind Juwan, looking back at him from the end zone. I mean, it was a great play. It was a great pass. He did everything. It was just timing. I mean, the guy put his helmet. If Juwan comes down with, and maneuvers the ball to his left side instead of his right, it's a touchdown. But he puts it on his right, and that's where the helmet is, just luck. and knocks it out. Everything else that the Saints did on that play was right. Spencer put it where he had to put it. But yeah, I mean, let me look at the LSU Clemson game. Like, that's a fumble? What?
Yeah.
I mean, that never even crossed my mind.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure what the rule is, but anyway, it is what it is. They're 0-1. The 1-0 San Francisco 49ers come to town, but they have a lot of injuries. I guess the final injury report's going to come out, today, 3 o'clock? We'll know for sure who's in, who's out.
Yeah, and I think it's on their end, it looks a lot worse than it is. I mean, they're going to be wrong. They're going to be without their starter, Brock Purdy, for 2 to 5 games, and then without, you know, their tight end, George Kittle. So it's not, but they've got like 10 guys, most of them playing. A lot of them were on rest. They had some guys that did not play in week one, excuse me, that I'll be curious if they come back. It's just, you know, they're kind of beat up at wide receiver. They had to go sign a wide receiver. They've got an injury at running back, but here's the equalizer. Christian McCaffrey. He touched it. Yeah. He was the one that was supposed to be injured the most coming into the game. Yet he had 31 touches and 58 plays. So when he's in there, he does so many things good, and he just goes so hard. He may be one of the best decoys, because when you're in there watching him, you think, well, this play's going to him, and you think it's going to him up until the very last second when it goes to somebody else. So, yeah, the answer is yes, we'll learn a lot more Saints-wise. I mean, Fuaga, to me, is the biggest kind of question out there. I don't think Trevor Penning's going to practice today or play. Julian Blackman, they're just kind of waiting on that decision. I don't think Chase Young, with his calf, is going to practice or play. Fuaga was limited yesterday. Can he improve enough between now and really Saturday before they have to make a final designation? And they can change it, but he would be the key to, from an offensive line standpoint, to get him in there on Sunday.
What do you see as how do we line up with them? What's the biggest challenge for us?
It's their defense against the run. I mean, they're very, very stout. Two great linebackers, D winners, and Frank. You know, they are just tough. They've got a secondary that's got some youth. Stout was beat a couple of times on double moves. I mean, here's the difference. They played pretty bad last week. They were not great in the red zone. They had 2 turnovers. But they kind of found a way to win. They had a kicker that was so bad they cut him, right? And so, but they, you know, they had 9 penalties themselves. They had 9 penalties, a kicker they cut, 2 interceptions from Brock Purdy, and were not great in the red zone. They were 2 of 5, 40%, 1 of 3, goal to go. I mean, all those factors say on the road, you lose. But they didn't. And the Saints had some of the similar problems, penalties, problems in the red zone, problems goal to go, didn't have any turnovers, but they lose. So, that, you know, from a matchup standpoint, you know, it's hard to say because they don't have Purdy and they don't have Kittle. They're kind of beat up at wide receiver, but Ricky Pearsall did a lot. They got a lot of guys out there, but it doesn't really matter if you're just going to throw to the same 2 or 3. If you're going to throw, you know, 10 targets to Christian McCaffrey and Pearsall with 4 catches, you don't need a whole lot else. Jake Tonges, he's the tight end. So here's a guy, he's in his 3rd year. I never even heard of him, right? He'd never had a catch in football, in the professional football league in 3 years until the final drive with 3 minutes left. And in that drive, he made 3 catches, one of them being for a touchdown and the game winner. So it's timing.
This sounds almost comical.
Yeah, I mean, I have more players on their roster who I have not X'd out. They've got a quarterback, So they have Purdy still on the roster. He's going to be, and Mac Jones. They've got another quarterback who's on the active non-football injury list. They've got another quarterback, Carter Bradley, who's on injured reserve. And then one more quarterback who's on the practice squad, Adrian Martinez, first year out of Kansas State. I'm like, well, I mean, he's going to be your second quarterback. They don't have anybody else unless they sign someone. So it's, you know, they've signed a tight end to their practice squad this week. They signed Eddie Pinheiro, who might not be that. I would have rather had Jake Moody, quite frankly, than Eddie Pinheiro. He does great against the Saints. So they're beat up in a bunch of different places, but they were pretty beat up last week in a bunch of different places. Kittle didn't play the second half, but when you got Christian McCaffrey, man, you can do a lot of things.
Well, this puts more pressure then on shutting down the run, because if you have an inexperienced quarterback playing, you really want him to throw the ball, right?
No, you're right, exactly. Both teams want the same thing. You know, the San Francisco wants to rattle Rattler, and now the Saints want to whack Mac. You know, Mac Jones, who has just had a challenging. You know, he's in his fifth year. You needed somebody out there like a Kyle Shanahan to say, hey, who's got kind of, you know, just the feeling that I can fix this kid, because he's played in 52 games, 44 interceptions, 6 pick sixes in 5 years. 2 of them came to the Saints, played the Saints in 21, Malcolm Jenkins pick six, Tyrann Mathieu picked 6 in 23. So you're right, yeah. You corral this running game. They've got Brian Johnson that they picked up from Washington and Christian, which is not easy to say corral it, but then you force Mac Jones into passing situations, the exact same plan that San Francisco has for the Saints, and then you just, you know, send the world at Mac and see what he can do. Saints are going to be, you know, probably with a rookie safety and Jonas Sanker, but I'll take Spencer Rattler over Mac Jones just from the ability to move around a little bit. But, you know, the 49ers have confidence in Mac Jones, and we'll see. He just hasn't done a lot, and played last year in Jacksonville, was 2-8. He kind of played the end of the season last year. You know, he was a first round pick in back with New England, you know, the 15th overall. I thought that was kind of a stretch, and he had a pretty good rookie year, but it's been a struggle ever since.
This is also one of those games that folks have kind of said, you know, I think the Saints are not favored in any game this year. If my memory serves me correct,
yep.
But this one of the games that people have chalked in to say, we got to win one of these a couple in the first four. This is probably one of them, and even more so now with the injuries.
Right. I think when the early lines came out of the season, you know, it was Brock Purdy coming in, and it was, you know, Brock Purdy and George Kittle and McCaffrey and everybody, and you know, but they don't really have everybody. So you're right. You got to figure out a way. It was my thought. You got to win one of your first two of your first four somehow. Now they got to go to Seattle next week and then Buffalo. But as you probably have said and will hear over the next 3 days, you know, there's a lot about when you play a team. So Purdy's going to miss 2-5. He has Atlanta and Tampa in week 6 and 7. So we need him to be out and then come back. To play as soon as he can. Be out this week and then come back as soon as he can.
Man, you've been working hard. You got this whole thing mapped out already.
Oh, yeah. No, this part's easy. Playing the game's the hard part. Anybody can do some mapping out.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a big test for this team, obviously, and it's a must win for them. You know, if you want to say that this early in the season, because you never know what's going to happen, right?
Right, you don't, but you don't want to start out 0-2 when you have to go to Seattle and Buffalo the week after that. So yeah, they're going to have to, and you want to get, I mean, you want to get Spencer a W, right? That storyline is already way old, and he's done some things right. He did a lot of things where the goal was, it felt like last week, just don't do things wrong. No picks, only had one sack, was smart, got rid of the ball, fairly conservative, it felt, offensively. So, you know, I feel like you're going to have to let it fly a little more, be a little more, you know, I'm putting words in Kellen Moore's mouth that they were conservative, but it felt like they were, because you need this one way bad now, way bad. You cannot have Mac Jones come into your building and have them, you know, because they're beat up in a lot of different places, and have them walk out with a victory.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. You know, I watched Rattler close. I was at the game last weekend. What I like about him is he's got touch on the ball, right? I mean, he's got a strong arm, but he does have touch, because there were a lot of those passes, like the one of Juwan Johnson. I mean, there was no other place for that ball to be than yeah. where it was.
That's what he's worked on really the most. Because that was never a strength. That's like every rookie, right? You got to learn when to throw a bullet, when to throw, you know, a fade, when to throw, put something on it, when to take something off. What you don't want, and we could have said this 3 weeks ago, if I'd have said, hey, guess what? In week one, Spencer Rattler is going to throw it 46 times. No. Well, that's not going to end well. Quite frankly, pretty, you know, fortuitous to be in that last drive. That's not this team's plan. You've got to run the ball better with Alvin and Bayless and Kendre, and they showed signs of it. But then you got down two scores. And in that two-score game, that might not be a lot in some games, but a two-score deficit for the Saints. And quite frankly, I kind of feel Spencer likes the tempo offense. I feel like he kind of gets into a better rhythm, you know, moving, just getting to the line of scrimmage and going like that, and didn't do it early. But once they did do it, you can't throw it 46 times. You're going to have to run the ball better, and hopefully that means Fuaga is there. But other than that, he made the right decisions. Threw it away when he didn't, you know, have anything. Didn't take the sack. Only had the one. Didn't throw the pick. And try to connect. You know, they had these long drives that go down there. They had it first and goal at the three. Get a field goal. They get in the red zone. Blake Groupie misses a chip shot. Man, you cannot do that. You can't have long drives that eat up clock. You get into the red zone or goal to go and don't come away with touchdowns. Touchdowns is the name of the game.
Yeah, and it was a shame. I agree with you, though, about Spencer. It seems to me, you know, what little I know, but I mean, just watching when the tempo was going much faster, it was more his instinct than really thinking about it, right? I agree with you. It looked like he found comfort in that pace.
Yeah, I think the two times that we've really seen him play well prior to this game was the second half against Washington when he replaced Jake. They were down, and he was just, you know, boom, 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 moving the ball. It was a sense of urgency. And the other time was the first half against Tampa at the end of the season in Tampa, where they just bang, bang, short passes, out patterns to the tight end, 5 yards, 6 yards. Just take what they give you and move the ball that way. He had a great first half, couldn't continue with the second half, but those are the two times when we've seen Spencer at his best, and also the Raider game. But when you get down there, you got to be at seven. You got to, whether it's the high red zone, 30 and in, take a shot at the end zone, because this team has struggled in the red zone and you can't afford to do it.
You feel a win?
Of course, I always feel a win on Friday when I'm talking to you. Always. And I feel a win today at 4 o'clock when Deuce and I are at the Rouse's on Power Boulevard. I feel a win until the final second kicked off the clock Sunday against Arizona. This is how I am.
Man, I thought Juwan had that catch. I thought it was a touchdown. I was like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. It's great.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, but it was fun nonetheless. And it was great to see that they were still competitive to the bitter end, right?
Yep. Yep, I agree. But now that's good feeling for competitiveness and to the bitter end, you get one of those. Now, yep. W.
Got to win it. Well, we'll be listening on Sunday. Have a great game. Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. We'll check in with you next week.
All right. Thank you, my friend. Have a good weekend.
You too. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On a text line, San Francisco has more talent than New Orleans, but San Fran is old and injured. The Saints are catching them at a good time, and hopefully that is the case, and hopefully it is true. And talking about catching it at a good time, you know, with the Saints battling the 49ers in the Caesars Superdome, you can start your day at 8 a.m. with Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak and the Caesars Sportsbook First Take. Then at 10 o'clock, join Bobby Hebert and Steve Geller for the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff inside the dome at Loge Level Gate B. And when you're in there, you got to kind of go up a little half section, and you'll see the guys over there. They love when you come by and say hello, and you know, and they love to engage in conversation with folks. And at noon, kickoff with Deuce and Haas with Jeff Nowak on the sideline. Then after the game, the Cajun Cannon for the Point After, live from the Swamp Room Bar and Grill at 5400 Veterans in Metairie. And if you love football, 10 hours of wall-to-wall black and gold coming your way Sunday on Saints versus the 49ers on WWL. And then, you know, we have the same offerings as it relates to LSU, taking on Florida. Start your game day 2 o'clock with Mike Dettillier and Herb Tyler and Gulf Coast Bank & Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Live from the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge, come out and count down to the big game at Acme with 16 surround sound TVs and the best drink specials. It's a great place to hang out for LSU and college football, all thanks to the good folks at Map Construction. Then at 4:30, catch LSU's official pregame show. Kickoff is 6:30 with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester. Tigers versus Gators tomorrow on WWL and streaming live on the free Odyssey app. I don't know about you guys, but I'm looking forward to this week and a lot of big football for our football teams, and definitely looking forward to it. And hopefully we're able to pull out the wins. All right, we're going to be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we get back, so stay. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up on Free for All Friday?
We will talk about the shooter who is now in custody. We'll talk a little bit about that today. Also, I want to talk about the Saints. I think there's a lot of interest and excitement about this game because the 49ers are a little banged up, and the Saints could win this game. And Spencer Rattler has gotten some pretty good reviews around the country for his performance in the first game. And LSU's got a big, big test against Florida. We'll see which LSU team shows up. Yeah.
And Duke's at Tulane tomorrow night, 7
That's right. That's a classic.
Absolutely. Scoot's up next. Got a great lineup coming your way. Stay tuned. Have a great weekend.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.